Deck number 16722, Captain George Ledger, Reel 12.
Captain Ledger, Reel 12. We were talking about the civilians in the area that you are now stationed. Did you get involved with the civilians in any way, as you had done prior to when you were in the Cotswolds?
The civilians in on the coastal areas.
Coastal areas.
Not involved as such, not in any dances or nightclub or anything like that sort of thing. The only involvement we had with civilians was being polite to them, being careful and weren't damaging their property, going about our business as soldiers and troops, not harming anything, you know, trying to keep friends, not doing anything to upset them. There was a lot of fraternization went on between the females and the troops, naturally, which was an understood thing, it was a natural thing. And the only thing we'd lacked, as far as Eatmouth and West Painting, there was no nightclubs or dance halls. We didn't have any opportunity to go in dance halls, things like that. There were 10 places like that. You had to go further out in a place like Bridport and further afield, which we couldn't do because we were standing by guarding the beaches.
You're standing two every night and morning.
We were standing two all night. All night we were standing two.
Did you have any invasion scares at all whilst you were there?
The only invasion scare we had was when these two were taken at Lyme Regis. None at our immediate spot. As you must remember, Harry, that I'm only talking about my immediate company, my small section. I'm not talking about what's happening. It's my section, my company. But I cannot talk about other ones.
Parachutists at all, were they?
No, there was one parachutist came down and he was caught by the battalion. Now, I don't know who caught him, but it was the 8th Battalion Headquarters who came with the information. Said that he had been, I think he had come from an aeroplane, he had jumped from an aeroplane which had been hit, and he had been captured. Now, we had one scare where they took us all out, saying that it was two supposedly came down from an aeroplane. It involved myself, my section. In fact, not only my platoon. Whole platoon was sent out. And we went up into the fields round about 15, 20 miles from Bridport, and we surrounded the whole area and we searched there, but we never found a thing. It must have just been a scare.
In the early days, how mobile were you? Did you have any kind of vehicles, cycles, anything of this nature to get around the countryside?
In beginning when, Harry?
Those early days in Dorset.
In Dorset?
While you were still scarce of material.
We had the small battalion PUs, which the brigade major used to have. He had a PU. We had the company lorry for the supplies for the quartermaster sergeant and the storekeeper. And the only vehicles we had were bicycles, as far as I remember.
You hadn't requisitioned any buses
or... Yes, well, there were buses which didn't come under our requisitioning schemes. They came under headquarters and battalion higher up. Not from the company, lower down, you know. We were lower down as a company. But such things as requisition, such things as buses, they came under the battalion headquarters stuff, you know. The only time that was varied was when we had to go out ourselves and or to meet various personnel, like the King and Sustain, who came to see us, and we had to requisition buses and things. Company commander had to do his best to get them because the headquarters battalion were too full up, so they left that little bit of time. But that was the only occasion, I think, when we had to requisition buses ourselves. it was all done by battalion headquarters, and of course they had the administrative staff to attend to that sort of thing. Whereas the company headquarters was just mainly dealing with the actual fighting business of the company.
What was the morale, the spirit of your own people like around you? In the very early days on the beaches.
The local inhabitants.
No, yourselves.
Or ourselves. When we got back here and we got ourselves sorted out and got rid of the fatigue, and just like after Dunkirk, we sort of seemed to just build up, and we sort of built ourselves. We were very, very happy. Very happy. We weren't sad, we weren't angry that we'd been pushed out of France, because we knew we were going back. That was where we felt. Always soon be back there. That's the way we all got taught. Always soon get back there. And then
How were your losses made up? Because you obviously had lost men.
This is where we start to find a difference with the 8th Battalion. We start at one time through such a lot were taken prisoner, and then there was a lot of illness, and then there was such a lot disabled. And we started to get people in from different parts of the country, you know, and for people who weren't Tynesiders and Geordies, the language, the way they spoke seemed to be different. When you're standing in a platoon, you're giving orders out, and somebody would be a sergeant from another regiment who come to join ours, his voice was sound differently to the ones we've heard, you know. Like I'm talking to you now, I'm saying, well, you know, man, and you know, and there was you should do it this way, and the vocabulary was absolutely different. But mind, having said that, there was only one regiment which the DLI could never get on with, and every time they met, there was fights, and that was the Middlesex Regiment. And that started off in France, and it carried on right throughout the war. They disliked each other.
Where were your drafts coming from?
The drafts?
Your reinforcements for the people you had lost.
They were coming from, I think it was Bransworth Castle where they were coming from.
Well, they were Durham lads, were they?
Well, a lot of them, but...
Did you get them from other regiments? You did say they were coming from different parts of the country.
Well, they did, yes. So, but they used to come to Bransworth.
I see.
From other parts of the country, they used to come to Bransworth. They used to get training there, and then they used to come from Bransworth across to our regiment.
And which regiments did they come from?
I couldn't tell you the names of them, different ones.
Did you get some Scots?
We had Scots people in, yes. Not very many, mind, but we did have some Scots. I just can't remember the names.
But presumably these people settled in quite well in time.
Well, we found the Scots lads were more easy to get involved with than what we did with the people who came from the Midlands. They were easier to join in with the Geordie lads, you know, the Scots lads. I suppose that's because we lived a bit closer to them. But I cannot say we had any, there was no animosity or ill feeling about having the new influx. I mean, they just joined us and they were just one of the lads again. And after a short while they were there, we got to know one another and they got to know us. And we just lived together and that was it. Just carried out a training and such like. In fact, there was a lot of the new ones who came in. They used to get promotion from above the regular. You know, of course, you must understand, a lot of our lads in the DLI didn't want promotion. The majority of them just working lads in the mines, and they didn't. They were just too pleased to be in the army. They didn't want to be sergeants or corporals. True, they didn't want to be that one. But there's a lot of these strange lads who were transferred up to us. They were very keen to get on, and those were the type who did get promotion. But they were very good. I cannot say anything wrong about the ones who came in.
After being on the beaches, where did you move to? Because you moved back, didn't you? Inland?
We came off the beaches and moved up into Honiton.
What were you doing there?
It was just normal training and preparation for going to Egypt.
These were more manoeuvres and
yes.
This kind of thing?
Yes, just keeping ourselves mobile. And actually, we were getting... fitted up with equipment for wearing in Egypt. the pith helmets and such like, and the khaki, KD.
Can we talk about your manoeuvres? Where were they taking place?
Our manoeuvres from Honiton. The manoeuvres just was for training.
On the moors, round
about. Oh yes, we had some right across Exmoor, Dartmoor. Exmoor is right away from Honiton, and went right away to Barnstaple. You know, right into the far side, Minehead, and that way. And there was one time we were out there for a week on a week's manoeuvres, and it was in the winter. And there was a brand gun carrier went missing. And the poor lads were killed. They died on the moors, belonged to the headquarters. The Bren gun carriers. And they died.
Was this exposure or...?
Exposure. Because we were out there on the manoeuvres in the snow. We were sleeping in the hedges. Really down-to-earth stuff. You know, no hanky-panky about it. It was the real thing. It was just as if we were in action. Really went to tongue with us there. But this didn't worry us because we had already got used to it in France, you know, the trouble in France. We realised that it had struck us when we... So we decided there and then like that. We had to accept the fact that things weren't going to get any better and we got the thing finished off.
Your training, what kind of training was it?
The training mainly was manoeuvres up on the moors. The whole battalions were taking place with it. And not just a company, the whole battalion was out. And as I say, we spent 1 week all together, right throughout the whole moors, just attacking various places supposed to be occupied by the enemy, making standing patrols, going out and during the night and doing standing patrols, listening patrols, and proper patrols, attacking patrols, just waking people, you know, frightening people. Those are the two or three different types of patrols we were taught.
What happened next?
Well, after we had the training on these patrols in the in the moors, and there was two enforceable chaps in the Bren gun were found, we terminated the patrols after about a week on the moors. And then we went down and we were billeted at a place called Barnstaple. And from there we just got ourselves together again, prepared to move to another area.
So what date did you leave for the journey abroad, Middle East?
In April 1941... We set out for Egypt, and we went round to Egypt by the Cape.
Do you recall the journey from the southwest of England up to the place you left from?
Yes, we left from, I believe it was Honiton where we left from, and we went up to, came back through our hometown here in Birtley, County Durham, and then we went up to a place called Gorick in Scotland, and that's where we boarded ship. We embarked in Gorick, and then we left and travelled down by the Cape.
Do you recall the name of the ship that you were on?
I can't remember the name of the ship. I don't think I've got it written down anywhere. The name of the ship went out on.
What were the conditions on the ship?
The conditions were... They were bearable. There were a lot of troops, naturally. We were very, very crowded, but bearable. And a lot of us used to go up when we got outside, away from the vicinity of this country, and down via travelling down the via Spain and down the African coast, we used to go up and sleep on deck. We used to fix up the hammocks up there and sleep on a hammock, but we found it wasn't very pleasant at times because you used to get the smoke off the chimney. You used to be covered in a soot when you woke up at times. But the conditions were quite bearable. We were looked after and we carried out our training on board ship. We had the usual PT drill on the morning, which was rather extensive because we had to keep running around in circles, round and round the ship to get exercise and such like. At other places, we had very small sections where we stood and did physical training, but there wasn't too many of those, with such a lot of people being on board. Very, very large ship. I think it was the King George. I'm not sure. I think it was the King something.
Did you have duties to perform on the ship?
Yes, we had duties to perform in as much as we had to look after the decks. And we had to make sure that the personnel who owned sections were correctly dressed for these muster parades. And we had to... we had fire drill during that period, regular fire drill we had.
What was the food like on the ship?
The food was quite good on board ship. We had it regular. The feeding rooms were most good. We had it very, very regular. We found a great difference getting on board ship to what we were doing when we were out on the moors and training in this country. Although we were fed in this country pretty regular, but a little cuckoos, but it was rather better on board ship than what we had received when we were training in this country. We eventually got down to the Cape, round the Cape, and we stayed at a place called Durban.
Before we get to Durban, can you just talk a little bit longer about the life on the ship itself? Yeah. You had the duties and you did PT. There must have been long periods of time when you literally had to find your own interests, your own...
We had a lot of time on our hands.
Was that boring?
Very, very, very boring. We had lots of time to write letters. And read, writing, and a lot of my own time was spent just looking at the army manuals, the training manuals we had.
Were you a sergeant at this time?
I was a sergeant at that time, yes.
So were your bunk arrangements or sleeping arrangements different from the main body of men?
Not really, because we were so enclosed. We could be at one end of the room or the corridor, wherever we were, or the hall, whichever you might call them. The other ranks, the privates and the lance corporals, just like, were intermingled with them. But we did have a sergeant, did have the special corner to go to. You know, we had our own special place to go to. And we weren't really, we were very, very close, but we weren't on top of them all the time. In some cases, there were some separate wards, like small, very, very small rooms where two sergeants could go in. But mainly we were just kept in sections.
Were the deck inspections regularly?
The deck inspections were very, very regular.
Who made these inspections?
Well, the inspections carried... We used to have a duty officer of the day, every day. Officer used to take a duty. We called him the duty officer of the day, and he used to come around and inspect. And he used to change regularly. After too much to give the officers training to and looking after the men on board ship.
Did naval officers also come round to check?
The naval officers didn't have a lot to do with us. We were kept solely in control by our own officers, by our own people. In fact, we had to keep out of the road of the naval officers, let them get on with the business of running the ship. Because you can imagine with a whole battalion of men on board ship, it was a very large ship, and a whole battalion of us were on. We had to make sure that we didn't hinder any of the efforts we had been making to make our passage comfortable. It was very, very difficult for them.
Leisure time of activities on the boat, what did they arrange for you? What did they organise?
Well, we had a lot of films, we had films on board ship. Lots of lectures, lots of sand tables, this sort of thing. Map reading lectures mainly. And then we had a lot of lectures going out relating to the country we were going to, what we hoped to expect, how we were going to be met, which we were going to be conveyed to the different positions. And we had tons of time to talk about that, and our expectations when we got there were a little bit disillusioned, because we built up to such an expectation of grandiose things. When we got there, we found nothing else but a deserted stretch of desert and what have you, and lots of poverty and such like.
What kind of activities? Did you have the usual kind of shipboard activities? Housey-housey, as it was called then?
There was a lot of bingo went on. Housey-housey, they called it then. Bingo was a new word. Didn't call it bingo then. Housey-housey. Well, a lot of us didn't care for that sort of thing, and we didn't have to take part, but lots of us just sat, and mainly it was dominoes and cards, but a lot of card playing that took place.
And that wasn't frowned on the ship?
Well,
gambling of this nature?
The gambling, I never heard anyone being disciplined for it. I mean, it did carry on. But the officers at the time didn't actually like to see it. They didn't take kindly to it. But it always went on as gambling with the cards and dominoes. There was always some money on the table when you were playing. But it was always, there was times when any officers walking around or in the vicinity, it was covered up, and it was just a sort of a friendly game. They all know it went on, but they just kept the blind eye to a lot of it.
Was there boxing competitions held?
There was a lot of boxing went on, yes. But it was a friendly type of boxing. It was just a matter of training and keeping people physically fit. At the same time, the boxing which I was related to was... Not that I took any part in the boxing myself, but I was more concerned with the headquarters department where the boxing people used to belong to. They used to, somehow or other, it always seemed to be headquarters, battalion headquarters formations, which had all these special personnel. And boxers came out.
Was there a canteen on board the boat?
There were types of places where we could go to. They were not classed out as shops, but to put the word as a canteen, you can class it as some sort of a canteen, whereby you got you can buy extra special things which weren't issued to eat, and such like sweets, chocolate, and cigarettes, and such like. But cigarettes didn't bother me because I never smoked at that time. And the Russians we used to get, I used to give them to my two brothers.
As a sergeant, did you have specific duties on the ship yourself?
Yes, we had specific duties even as corporals in charge of the section, but as a sergeant, and we became platoon sergeants, and we had more men to look after. Instead of three sections, we were looking after one section as a corporal, we were looking after three sections and a platoon headquarters formation. As a sergeant, and that kept us busy. But of course, all our work was passed down by just handing the work back to the corporals, and they passed it on to the sections again. And we were helped in this work by the company sergeant major. This company sergeant major used to coordinate the work between the three platoons in the company, and he used to coordinate the work within the three platoons in relation to company headquarters.
Was there an OC troops in charge of the army side of the boat?
There was. We had a...
Did you come into contact with him?
Oh, regular, yes. On board ship, we couldn't avoid the OC troops. He was always there.
What was he like?
Very stern, very pleasant chap, a very pleasant chap. I'm just trying to remember his name. I'm terrible at my age, remembering names. But the second in command of our platoon was Major McLaren at the time. And then the other one was Lieutenant Colonel Beard. And then we had another one who took over from him, Colonel Turnbull. for a short while. It just seemed to change over those two at different times. One kept it going away and the other one kept coming in, and it used to change for short periods. But they were always in the forefront. We were always being inspected by them on board ship. But they didn't seem to stop any of the train. We used to come around and just watch us doing various groups of us. And they used to just patrol around the ship and see the various sections carrying on with the training, mainly PT in on the board ship. We did have lots of games, like, what do you call it, not putting the shot, similar, you know. But I think the main part of it was just trying to make ourselves less bored.
Did it cause any problems as the voyage went on, the boredom and the monotony of it all?
It didn't cause problems because as time went on, we became to just rehabilitate ourselves and accustom ourselves to the procedure. And lots of preparations were going as we got further down towards the equator. Lots of preparations were being made for to carry out the meeting at the equator, where we had quite a party at the time.
Were there any particular incidents in the convoy situation? Didn't you lose your escort early on? You went looking for the Bismarck. Did that occur?
In our case, we seemed to hug the coast a lot, in our, but however, ever so often when we were looking out to sea, you could see lots and lots of ships' formations at each side of us, and we had rather a sad occasion when we, just before we reached the Cape, when we had one of these planes used to take off from the ship and carry out, used to carry out inspections or
observations
ahead of us with the planes. And a special morning I was talking about, this plane took off and it circled around in front of us, and then it seemed to go around and round and round, and then it just seemed to explode in the air and crash into the sea just about 200-300 yards from our ship, just straight into the sea. And that was just before we arrived at the Cape. And at that time, our ship did a complete double circle right around the area and then continued on our way, because there were other ships who were protecting us on the outskirts, on the outside of us. But I never heard anything after that. What we never found out if anyone was rescued from it. Or.
Do you recall stopping at Freetown on your way down?
We stopped. That was before we stayed at Freetown, before this incident happened at the Cape. We stayed on the outskirts of Freetown. We weren't allowed in. That was the Gold Coast, we called it. And we remember being dropped anchor there, but we could not go across, we couldn't get on board on land, stay on board ship all the time. And I presume that we were just filling up with water and just like various stores, or taking stores to Freetown, or whatever they were doing.
You get the bum boats coming out?
Those were a regular occurrence wherever we went. Freetown was the first one where we really stopped, and the sea was one mass of these boats, small craft, and they had every known type of food on them, and they were shouting up to us, and we were shouting down to them, and we were throwing money down to them, and they were fastening the grub onto the, and then we were pulling them up in ropes at the side of the ship. And then they used to had a favourite trick of not selling you anything, but they would just dive for money. They would do it and show you how they could dive. And they were just coppers who were thrown, you know, at coppers. And then they would dive down, you see, and then they'd come back and wave it to you that they'd got it, you know. We had lots and lots of those. The same thing happened when we left Freetown. We went down and we stopped just outside the Cape, just before we got into Durban. The same thing happened. And eventually we pulled into Durban, and that was where we stayed. I think it was about a week or so we stayed in Durban.